here we go again? How's that? Is that pretty close? I mean, if you were going to encapsulate what we, you and I are getting ready to speak, and we're going to put a headline on it, here we go again?
Well, keep in mind, K-12 schools are very fortunate in the bigger scheme of things in the state, in that the General Assembly and the governor are aware of how many people that affects, how many parents, how many families that affects, and that is one thing that has been passed for funding. And remember back in June when part of that stopgap budget was K-12 funding for the whole year, which was our general state aid, fully funded. We got more money in general state aid, closer to the amount that by formula we were supposed to be receiving the last several years. But that's not the whole story. There are also other funds such that are called mandated categoricals. It's reimbursement for transportation. It's reimbursement for special ed services and personnel and other things like that.
It all doesn't come on one single check.
It does not all come on one single
check. There are sprinkle checks, because I wanted to ask you about this bus story, the bus. I've been talking about this, talking about you coming in today, because I forgot exactly where I read it, but I think the term was quietly stopped making payments.
Well, that's exactly where I'm headed. The payment for mandated categoricals from last budget year, so it would have been the June payment, okay, we haven't seen that yet. So
paid by the quarter or by the month?
It's supposed to be paid by the quarter. Some years you get three, some years you get two.
Right.
Every once in a while, we get four. It's one of those things that usually lags, but I haven't got it since June. When State Superintendent Dr. Tony Smith was down a couple months ago and touring our schools, spoke to superintendents, and he said that payment should be to us in December. Didn't say what day in December. Assumed at the end of the month, but that's one payment in December, and I presume the state has to make sure they have enough money, because you can't trickle that out. It's got to be the whole chunk at once. We haven't seen that yet, okay? I talked to one school district this morning who's in the neighborhood of still owed $110,000 on that from last year, plus payments, the things that have needed to be paid from the first quarter this year, and now he's looking at about $200,000 total he's down just in that area. And that is where school districts who are borrowing out and using lines of credit are suddenly being called on that, and we don't have those funds right now.
And then you got the bus company who says, wait a second, hold on, we got to buy gas, and we have to pay payroll here.
And that is where everybody is so overextended, and where does that end up? And then there's some agencies that run grant programs where you can't use just the cash sitting in your account because it's for specific grants.
Right.
So you can't even move money back and forth.
You cannot commingle funds.
And I mean, for our offices, for example, we are getting federal grant funds for several things we run. But as far as truancy money, state drug prevention grant we have,
all these follow in this category of these mandates that have a different funding path?
They come out of the general fund, okay? The priority is on getting those general state aid payments out, which is fantastic for us. And we know everybody else is hurting.
Your foundational money, right?
That's the state aid is coming. They're paying that off the top. I know Representative Bradley had said back during the conversations that the governor said that will be paid. So I know that's their priority, which thank goodness it is, but that's not the whole picture. And then you end up, okay, for example, transportation, which in this part of the state is very important as far apart as we are.
Inherently rural area, a lot of kids on buses.
It is. And then, of course, the more we talk about things like consolidation and other things, that means through the years we've done that, we've put the newer buildings out on the edge of town, all those things that cause reasons you have to have transportation. And then we talk about, I know our office since July 1st has trained 70-some-odd bus drivers, yet you still see buses with signs saying we need people.
Right.
There is a not only teacher shortage in the state, which we realize, there's a bus driver shortage up in the Bloomington area. They've had to combine routes, don't have enough drivers to cover what they can. Well, what's one way you might think, how can we get more drivers? Pay more. Not like this.
Right. Maybe there are some of the 114,144 people that have left the state.
Potentially.
Okay. The school formula. They say they're working on it. They say that the bipartisan group continues to work on the school funding formula.
That was an interesting, AP story.
You've
got
at some point, you become numb to the prospect of hope. I mean, there's some point, you know, I try really hard not to be cynical and jaded. I mean, because that's my inherent nature, is a little on the dark side. And this has strung on so long now. And it's interesting because whenever I heard you talk about the general funds, the governor says they're going to be signed, you know, that this money's coming. I just don't believe anything anybody says anymore. And I'm not talking about what you're talking about, Matt. I'm not talking about you. But when I hear, oh, we're working on a budget, we're working on a school funding formula, we're working. Well, you know, you've been saying that a long time. I don't believe it. And I don't believe, it's not that I don't believe they're working on it. I just don't believe they'll ever get it done.
It was an interesting AP story yesterday. It was kind of like, we have to say something, so let's make news. School Funding Task Force. This is the one that the governor announced back in the summer.
I believe it was June or July this last year.
Okay, yeah. So it has been meeting. They meet every 2 weeks at least. I see the notes on them. People can listen into them. Made up of, he designated legislators from both sides. I believe Senator Luckenfeld is still on that committee. At last I knew, and they are meeting. They have a February 1st deadline to get information back to the governor. Now, that group seems to be, from my take on it, going through a lot of the ground that we've been covering for so long that if you've done school funding, yeah, we know that.
Right.
But they're going through it all. One of the things includes that that the Superintendent School Board Association and under the leadership of Brent Clark from down here, who's in charge of that association, and some other folks, the funding model, the evidence-based funding model, as one of the options. But even if that's implemented, that's going to take some more funds. But they're being presented all these things. At the same time, Senator Kimberly Lightford is also leading another group on the side. But is anybody plowing new ground with this? Not necessarily.
Yeah, this ground has been sufficiently tilled, hasn't it?
The governor will have his plan to put out there, too, I suppose, is where we're headed with this.
Can I tell you what I'm worried about? That nothing's changed in the state of Illinois. Two groups, adversarial, want to win. They thought that getting the school funding education would give them time, would make them look good, and now we're at a situation where we're going to make something happen, I'm going to win, and one of the ways I can turn the heat up is not funding schools, that I can precipitate an end to this conflict by causing more damage. And of course, that's not what they're thinking. Damage is my word. By precipitating it, by keeping these kids out of schools, by keeping these teachers out of schools, by hitting Illinois in a sensitive place, that they'll precipitate an outcome.
When the federal government does a shutdown, as we've seen in various budget fights, which is not good, but when they shut down, they shut down. In Illinois, we haven't done that. You saw the polls back in the summer, still X percentage of people, oh, this isn't affecting us at all.
Right.
That's one thing that will.
Well, then we'll affect you now. Now you'll pick a side, won't you?
You know why the last 2 years that's always been taken care of. K-12 has, at least from where they sit.
Right.
If you're on the ground, well, you're kind of piecing it together. But again, we know we're doing better than the other groups.
Right. A couple of miscellaneous items I'm kind of curious about. If we get a chance, I want to get back to funding, but I'm curious about a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you and I have talked about a lot, and that is people, parents, teachers, members of the community, may not always be aware of all the things that get done at schools, that it's not just about reading, writing, arithmetic anymore. And one of those is checking to make sure your bus drivers are qualified and background checks, things along that line. That all is part of, and that's part of your job as superintendent, overseeing that that's done in all the school districts.
Yes.
And you saw the bus accident in Tennessee.
Yes.
With the young people losing their lives, going too fast, going on an unapproved route, had been reported, and nothing had been done. And now this new move to put seatbelts on school buses. And having ridden my fair share on school buses, I'm thinking, how does the driver enforce that? How does the driver make sure everybody's got their seat belt on? And then, of course, the other article saying, well, what in the event of an emergency evacuation? I wasn't worried about that quite as much because I think kids are pretty well trained on these seatbelts because we have to in the state of Illinois. I was kind of curious what your thoughts were on these laws and the need to keep kids safety because this bus incident, I believe, will precipitate a more focus on this category in a number of places, and I don't have any reason to believe that we'd be an exception.
Well, you say new, and it's not necessarily new. It's been a debate that's been out there. It's just different news events. Like, I remember Dr. Maple used to say it, that in the government class at John A. Logan, you have a crisis, we have to attack it. That's how we
do
things.
Rahm Emanuel's business plan. Never let a disaster go unabused.
There you go. It is part of the safety and the changes that have been done through the years. You think of even in the mid-late 70s when I was starting school, we had the buses with the low seats, with the metal frames on the
sure
seats,
did.
With the, all those kinds of things. And you could sit by the driver and run the stop sign. Yeah, it probably wasn't a good thing to be doing either.
Right.
You have higher seats, you have more padding, you have all the training you have. Still yet, by all stats at least, unless it's, you're the one involved, riding a bus back and forth to school is the safest way to get back and forth to school every day. We don't, but it's kind of like airplanes versus cars.
Right.
We know what the stats look like. It's still not good when you see these things happen. It becomes the debate on seatbelts, kind of like it was back in the late 80s when we did a seatbelt law to begin with. What if I'm trapped in there? I do remember, I guess when I was in kindergarten, see, it's a good thing I was a history major.
Can't even believe you remember that far back.
Traumatic. Bus rides, too.
That helps.
It started pouring one day, and all the windows were down. Kindergartners, we couldn't really put the windows up. So the driver had to stop and put all the windows up, and we got soaked just in that time.
Right.
And I think of then, okay, the fact that kids are now strapped in all their lives, which we weren't, okay, that should have them more able to do those things. But it's also, depending on if you have a bus where everybody in the neighborhood's on it, we got the big kids that can help the little kids. That's one thing. But what if you have just the kindergartners on the bus or just the first graders on the bus? We can, and of course, like with everything, we can do everything we can to make it as safe as possible, but there's always a cost to that.
And you can't change the fact that a human being's body wasn't really meant to go more than 5 miles an hour.
No.
That's I hate to be so rudimentary about that, but we're going more than the body. Human body is not designed to go faster than 5 miles an hour. A really good fast run, walk, and fall, and the traveling is one of those things.
And but, it goes back to one reason
but
why.
Doesn't that seatbelt thing? Is it the common sense? And then you realize, well, humans and kids, you know.
There's always, but transportation and getting back and forth to school has always been something. You know, I do stuff back in the 20s in microfilm, and one of the things about. In West Frankfort, they consolidated grade schools for a while and then pulled it back apart till the 50s. One thing people were complaining about was, well, my kids got to walk across that creek to get to school. That's not safe. You ought to go here.
Right.
It becomes our most precious cargo. How do we get them back and forth safely? And then that's why we're concerned when you go in any school zone on any morning, which you don't have to because you're sitting here.
Right.
But we're talking to all those folks. It's a madhouse.
All I can tell you is I was on vacation last week and happened to be in a different situation than I customarily am. And my first thought is, what a bunch of jackasses. And I'm talking about the drivers who ignore school buses and school bus stop warnings. What a bunch of you. Well, I just said it. I don't have to say it more than once. Wow.
Yep.
I had talked to some other teachers and administrators, and they said, you don't understand. We get complaints from our drivers every single day about these things.
And that's either intentional or it's because we've got 500 things on our mind in the morning.
Yeah. And it's only a matter of time. People keep doing some of this stuff. I really am surprised. Well, and I get people being in a hurry. I'm time-starved just like everybody else. Hey, we're already out of time. You know, we had a really cold weekend. One of the programs that you literally talk to me about all the time is your Coach for Kids. I would think that Sunday night, Monday morning, Tuesday morning was a good time to know that that you had gone out. And how many coats had disseminated recently?
We raised, for Egyptian Building Trades, Coats for Kids, we raised cleared a little over $12,000 this year, which is a little down, but we use what money we have.
Right.
We get it out there over 18 counties, because it's 3 ROEs. And offer $50 per student. Teachers identify who needs the coats, who needs the clothing items, because it's clothing items to go out and buy. And we're most of the way through that process, at least in my ROE and the others, getting those out there. But we take donations all through the year, and we'll get those funds out to the kids as soon as we can to help them out. One of just many groups. We talk about how schools and others take care of things. There are teachers that collect, that buy all those things, all the charities, the good people of Southern Illinois that make sure the kids have a chance, because where they've ended up isn't their fault.
Right. And we all know what it's like to feel a little cold, and we don't want to see a young person do that, especially while they're waiting on the bus. It might be a little bit slow coming one morning. You know, you never know.
Certainly.
News
Certainly.
Radio WJPF Regional Superintendent of Schools, Matt Duncan. Quickly, before I let you go, Matt, how do you, 12/31, right? Budget and all this stuff. Now, granted, you received budget for the school year. It's not like the schools run out of money at midnight on December 31st. What are your prospects? What do you hear out of Springfield? What do you think is going to happen? Now, I shared you my rather dark view that stop schools and will cause more pressure to the opposing force, and then we'll come out victors.
We are scheduled to receive state aid throughout the budget year. We have the concerns that what if there's not funds in the cash drawer to cover that? But we have that. And here's a lousy scenario. All these other groups covered by the stopgap that ends 12/31, when there's no authorization to send vouchers on January 1st, the line will suddenly get shorter because education will be, K-12 will be about the only ones in the line.
Right.
Gee, well, that's like saying, look at the accident out there and clearing the line in front of you. That's no way to operate.
Right.
But then the plans are, okay, what about next year? And we've got to decide by March, do we lay off or not? And those kinds of things, it's immediate again.
Because you are, once again, as we discussed last year, we get into this now, we're kind of well-practiced. And I hate to say that because it's an admission of failure. Becoming more adept at dealing with these issues. And, of course, what you just alluded to is the law that you have to notify people X number of days out before any change in their employment status. And that if you don't have some note on the budget, you have to send the notices, even if you think it won't happen, because you're required.
Can you imagine working in a triage unit every day?
No.
But the people that do, unfortunately, they adjust to it. And that's kind of where you feel.
Becoming like comfortable this. But with being uncomfortable?
It's just, it is what it is. And you deal with the problems that they come and hope you eventually get to talk about these grand goals for the future.
The problem is, you know, when it comes to education and the ability to, for the future, marginalizing the outcomes by insufficient funding, you get one swing at this stuff, and that I'm a lost generation of students. That I find unacceptable. I think that's the term. Actually, I've got more colorful terms. Unacceptable one's
unacceptable
the one that's airworthy.
Would be, yeah. And you're correct.
See, I have actually gotten to the point now where I really look back on my life more and more. I'm becoming increasingly nostalgic with every birthday, and I look back at what people have done for me in education. And I do. I mean my teachers. I mean whether it was George Delaney, who was from Franklin County, my Future Farmers of America advisor, and my agriculture teacher. Whether it was my art teacher, Barbara Allen. Whether it was Ron Crutchfield, my political teacher, and he also taught economics, Mr. Osmond. That those people made me. And I mean, in the very real sense. And I don't want that opportunity to not be there for kids. And you know, I mentioned a music teacher. I mentioned an art teacher, a music teacher. Those things go away. Those were important people, you know, to me when I was growing up.
Required
and, you know,
things to go away. Hopefully, at least, that we know every day with all the mandate curriculum, testing, all that stuff, just the curiosity and making sure we instill in our students a chance to aim high, achieve their goals, and joy to continue, want to continue to learn all their lives, and you hope you make that connection. And you've mentioned it. I do have, on the bright side of education, is running into people 10, 20 plus years out of school who remember and think and recall
right.
things like that.
Yeah. I just, as I get older, I realize the importance of those things that I tried to avoid so much, you know. I mean, to avoid that.
I used to tell my seniors, now, I don't want to hear you coming back here in 10 years to complain about these kids these days, because you were making the same decisions now.